This episode is brought to you by Heidy. Imagine kicking back while a HIPAA-compliant AI scribe writes your soap notes for free. Yes, you heard us right. Heidy is free. I'm Dr. Tom, Heidi's CEO and founder, and we started Heidy to stop clinicians wasting their life on clinical documentation. Heidy transforms your consult babble into crisp, clear soap notes, personalizing itself with every edit. One day, Heidy will be your AI resident, looking through research, explaining plans, and doing anything you don't want to. If you currently pay for an AI scribe in your practice, you should swap to Heidy. We'll even credit you for anything you've already paid. Dive into the description for the link and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town. Sign up and watch Heidy work its magic, all for free, because you've got better things to do.
My patient satisfaction scores are not as high as I thought they'd be. Let's talk to the Chief Clinical Officer of Prescaney to see what I can do about it. Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, we have Dr. Jessica Dudley. She was the Chief Medical Officer for the Brigham and Women's Physicians Organization, where she was responsible for leading physician efforts to improve quality performance. She also participated in the Partners Population Health Management efforts and chaired the Physician Network Performance Oversight Committee, among many other things that I needed to truncate from her bio, as she's really done a lot in physician leadership. But currently, she's the Chief Clinical Officer at Prescaney, which we all know, and leads their workforce well-being collaborative. So, Dr. Dudley, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. Block.
So, one of the big complaints that we get in our practice, and I'm sure it's everywhere, is lateness. Like, the physician doesn't run on time, right? We've all struggled with this. I don't know how to help people with this. I did a lit review and I couldn't find anything that shows what the habits are of physicians that tend to move more efficiently versus fall behind. So, because at Prescaney, you're all about patient satisfaction, right? And so if the main issue with satisfaction is wait times, is that something that you all can help people with?
So it's a great question, and I am going to answer that question. However, it is not the main driver of patient satisfaction, which is one of the things that you mentioned. In fact, the most important driver, especially if you're interested in improving patient experience, is actually staff work together. That is really key, and that's a marker for trust, because patients are worried that if you are not working with the other folks in your office, that things are going to get dropped and things are going to get missed. So yes, they do. They absolutely care about wait times and they care about access and they care about efficiency. And I'm going to put those in a separate bucket because we call those frictions. Those are things happening outside the visit, but they actually really care about their experiences within the visit. And during that visit, it really is staff working together and that the care provider, whether it's the physician or in many cases, an advanced practice provider, are actually listening to their concerns and enabling patients to be involved in their decisions. So it is about kind of respect, trust, communication is a big part of that patient experience piece. So to go back to your question, though, physicians, how can physicians move more quickly and more efficiently? The places that do this well, no one is doing it alone. So it is, the practice is a team. And there are folks who are each doing their role. I'm from New England. Do your job, Bill Belichick quote. But having the office as a team with everybody, you know, having sufficient resources to staff your office and then ensuring everybody has a role so the doc doesn't feel like they're doing every single piece of it is really important. So that absolutely helps. I think certainly folks who are efficient at using their electronic medical record do much better than those who are otherwise struggling. But I would say that those are the most key things, having kind of a well-run practice with sufficient resources. And then, you know, are you good at using the tools that you have available to you? Those for sure make things run better.
So those two friction points, you can, if you've got someone who requires some remediation, you know, check and make sure they're using all of the resources of the EMR, right? Like the, either dictation software or templates or whatever it can, whatever you can do to make sure that you're utilizing the, leveraging the technology.
Absolutely. Like optimized how you're using it to actually use it as an enabler versus what's often a frustration barrier and speed bump for many folks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've said it a couple times in recent episodes, ambient AI, I feel like is going to be a game changer.
I'm with you. I've seen some of the newer data on it and it's very exciting.
It's great because that barrier just evaporates. That time suck evaporates. So it's really, it is, it's exciting. And then other staff members, right? So what is it through your day that you're taking time doing when you're not doing patient care? And it might be data entry, right? It might be until the ambient AI is there, you know, you can have a scribe to do those, all the box clicking that is slowing you down. So I think it sounds like those are two things that you can really...
Yes, but let me just be clear on the resources and workflow staffing piece. I actually mean like all pieces, all of the different professionals that are participating in making your office run. So from the person who's greeting your patients to if you have somebody who's kind of doing some of the vitals or helping with some of the intake to whomever they're checking out with, every one of those touch points has a real potential to impact, of course, as you know this, the experience of your patient. And actually, like patients, they kind of, they're in your corner. They want you to succeed. So even though it might not feel that way and they come in and they're kind of angry that they've waited, we have seen tremendous improvement when offices spend the time to train their staff to be able to kind of communicate with the patients while they're in the waiting room. Tell them, Dr. Block is running 15 minutes late. He's really sorry. He had an emergency. Giving that just communication point really helps patients be much more kind of calmer and less frustrated because they're not just sitting there not knowing when you're going to be seeing them. So like communication around wait times is a hugely important factor around a friction that patients are experiencing.
So I found that the staff, and this is like, you know, this is American Express and Rich Carlton writes about this stuff, that if the staff feels like they're really part of the team and that the leadership cares about them as people, right? Not just as workers, but as people, then they tend to operate more proactively in situations like that, right? They're going to be more inclined to reach out to the patient on the doctor's behalf to let them know that they're running a little behind and why.
Are you getting me so excited? Because while patient experience is so critical, and that's kind of what you flagged me in to come talk about, I'm going to say a little quote that the chief experience officer for Press Ganey, Chrissy Daniels, cited, which is, there's no PX, that's patient experience, without EX. And the EX is employee experience. And I actually mean, and this is really important, and actually this is what I spend a lot of my time on, is how can we help clinics, help big hospitals or small practices figure out how they can function better as a team, as a unit? And what is the role, for example, of the doctor in that? And most of the cases, doctors are leaders in the situations that they're in, and they can make or break it for the experience of their staff. And that then makes or breaks it for the patients. So I would say, you know, we have, it's so clear, and maybe some of this has kind of been an evolution over time, but medicine is a team sport, and how you and your colleagues treat each other is foundational for how your patients are going to experience their time with you.
So then how do we get buy-in from those physicians who say, listen, this is what I do. This is why, the way I've always done it. I come in, I see my patients, I go home. Like, we have people for that. This is what I hire an office manager for. This is not, you know, what I'm involved in. This is not what I do.
So I think, so here's one, there are many great things about physicians. One great thing about physicians are they're very data driven and they really like to see data. And when they see data, that actually often enables behavior change. So this is where you've got to lean into the data. And there are two chunks of data that you could use here, actually three. So first are the experiences that your patients are having in the clinic. And you either can get that through a survey with like very standard questions. Many surveys actually also enable the patients to give their own feedback, their own comments. That data is incredibly rich. And with artificial intelligence and natural language processing, we can actually extract so that you can look at hundreds, thousands of comments in a very efficient way. And your practice can look at it and get a sense of how it's going for patients across the practice or just for you. So I think you looking at that data is actually really important. And it's not, you're not looking at it to kind of find the needle in the haystack that says Dr. Block was really obnoxious and mean and I hate him. That's not what we're looking for. We are looking, we want to know if there's a pattern of challenging stuff, but that's rare. It's normally what we'll, is most of the time, docs are doing a great job, except patients need you to do a great job for every single one of them. So you might have done a phenomenal job for 85%, maybe even 95% of your patients, but the last five, let's say you saw 30 or 40 in a day, and there might have been five amongst them that, you know, you were running so late or somebody interrupted you in the middle and you were short with them. And that kind of takes you out. And that is a bad experience for that patient. So how do we help support like more reliable processes so you can get it right for every single one of those patients? And I think that that's why the data is really helpful so that you can focus on the stuff that you're doing well and figure out how do we do this well for every patient.
I feel like that puts an undue amount of pressure on the physicians to have the expectations. I mean, the patients deserve our best every time, but does that really put too much pressure on the physician that every time, you know, that someone has a bad experience, that's cause for, you know, I feel like that's putting a lot of, it's put a lot of pressure on us. Like I have bad days. I have nights where my kids don't sleep. I'm not at my best all the time. And certainly the patients deserve me at my best and I should keep trying for my best, but I should also be able to give myself the grace to say, listen, I'm human and I can have bad days too.
Okay. 100%. Nobody can be perfect all the time, for sure. Patients are pretty forgiving when we look at the data. Not always, but you have a lot of chances to actually get it right. And you don't have to be perfect. There are a few things, though, that if you do them reliably, it makes a big difference. And they were what I was talking about earlier. Staff working together is actually huge. If you can get that right, so if you can communicate, if it's clear that you are working with the other staff in your clinic, so you're using the name of your assistant, you know, or if somebody comes in, you refer to them by name and you make it very clear we work as a team and we will be following up with you and this is how we don't drop balls. That is actually huge. That gets you a huge percentage of the way there. If you spend, and you don't have to spend 20 minutes doing this, if you sit down and make eye contact and listen to a patient's concerns, and it's not, I mean, you could time this. We have training that we do this, especially when docs are really challenged by this. It actually takes so much less time than people think it does to actually listen. Do you have any more questions? And you actually listen. It actually takes less time than people think. We spend a lot of time on this when we do training. Staff work together, care providers listening to my concerns, and involving me in decisions. Those three things are going to get you all the way there. You do have to hope that your clinic runs relatively well. But again, if you get those three things right, patients will forgive the friction.
In the world of medicine, where every decision can change lives, your peace of mind is crucial. This is where Pattern steps in. Imagine insurance made simple, fast, and personalized just for you. With Pattern, you're not just getting disability and life insurance, you're insuring your future and protecting your greatest asset, your income. In the past 10 years, Pattern has transformed the way over 20,000 doctors secure their financial well-being. Discover the simplicity of securing your future at patternlife.com or click the link in the description.
I mean, I just asked you if we could make it faster, and now it's taken us a little longer. But no, I appreciate that. It's just, it's a couple beats, right? Like you ask, do you have, did I address all of your concerns? And then not standing up immediately when there's not an answer, like giving them a pause to really process and think if they have any more, because those few seconds then is going to save you time down the road.
Huge. And you don't actually have to believe me. If you are collecting data for your, if you're surveying your patients, which you probably are, you can collect this data and you will find you'll find what is unique for you and for your practice, but it isn't going to be 100 things. And you're right. You're not going to get it right for every patient on your own. That's why this kind of team is so important.
Yeah. I wonder how that language processing works, right? Because 5 years ago, it would have been just like, how frequently does the word jerk come up in your comment section? But now, yeah, the AI is allowing us to really process that rather than having someone sort through all of
it. That's exactly right. I mean, there are plenty of practices that people want to read every comment. But to actually decide where you want to focus your efforts, let's say at your practice level, like maybe there's 10 doctors in your practice, you could take those comments, use the AI, and it will pop out, and you can code them as like positive or negative. Most of the negative ones tend to be the kind of logistics, scheduling, access, not communicating wait times, but those will pop up. And then the positive ones may vary, but oftentimes it is around doctors listened to my concerns. Doctor, you know, gave me clear instructions on how to follow up. It's not as complex as kind of the care you're actually trying to deliver in the room with the patient.
So what's the most effective way to present the data? So you've collected it, you find the most common comments, right? Some positive, some negative. You want to give your physicians access so they can, you know, remediate or not. What's the most effective way to present this information?
It's a great question. And I'll answer it. And I want to say, I wouldn't just be presenting this data. One of the things that I mentioned, the no PX without EX, it's actually really important that you're surveying your staff on what their experience is. And if you ask them to just be focused on patients, but aren't taking the time to listen to them and their feedback, then your patient experience kind of victories will probably be short-lived and not sustained. So you really should be doing this while you're also collecting data and making sure you are absolutely responding and understanding the interests of the workforce. So that was just a kind of comment. From like, how do we best use the data? It's a great question, because I would say for many years, and we have many places where they're really great at collecting data. So every patient's getting surveyed, the data's pouring in, but it's almost drowning to the folks on the other end. And then there's plenty of places where there's so much data and it's just kind of sitting there. But there isn't like a process or a set of folks who are kind of owning moving forward with the data. Not just like data for data, but data to translate that into actions that we can actually do something with. And then the real thing you want to do is measure that whatever it is that you decided to do based on what you learned from your data, is it working or not? So I would say this is, again, both for patients and the workforce, something that has been a big change, especially in the last few years for the workforce, which is not just surveying. Many places survey their workforce once a year. We survey patients every time they come. It's continuous. We are now shifting to surveying the workforce in a more continuous way. It doesn't mean asking you the same questions that we asked you last week again, like, do you feel like you have a good manager or your colleagues are respectful? These are important questions. We'll ask those set of questions once a year. But then again, we want to find out where the opportunity is, make a change happen, and then just do a very short, brief survey to understand if what you're doing is working. So I'd say same in the patient experience side. When you do identify And there's going to be opportunities that your practice should be addressing. And then there's going to be activities or things that you yourself should be looking into. And you do need somebody who's kind of owning this for your practice to organize it and communicate it back. But just like there's technology like the ambient listening technology and telemedicine and all these other things, we now have far more ability to leverage an analytic platform to better present data in a way that's more user-friendly and can be more easily digested by whether it's your practice manager or in many cases, there are like individual physician leaders who really are interested in combing through that data.
So for the individual physicians, you're at some point you need to decide we've collected enough data, we're going to present it to them. But you also want to do it in an iterative way, meaning like, okay, we found this out about you. This is what you should work on for now. And then we're going to get back to you on how you've improved on that. But aren't you continuously asking patients the same questions? Like, I understand what you're saying about the staff. Like, okay, this is what we need to work on. We'll work on it. We'll see if it's been effective, and then we'll tackle the next issue. For the patients, we're always asking the same questions.
Yes, but the themes, but what we're learning, like hopefully, let's say, you know, last month or the last 6 months of data that you've been collecting, they're saying, you know, Dr. Block really listens, and I so appreciate that. And they give you that feedback. And then you think, gosh, that's awesome. And the, you know, 1 minute that I'm now sitting and asking, do you have any more questions? That must really be having an impact. So that's a, you know, you've changed your behavior small, but it's doing making a big change. So yes, we do ask the same questions of patients, but that kind of gives us an opportunity, I think. And honestly, as much as there's an opportunity to improve at an individual physician level, and there is, there's a bigger opportunity to be thinking about how are we working as a team and how are we running our practice? And that's, you know, that's, I think, a bigger nut to crack, but one that, again, a lot of places are really leaning into doing that.
So how can we do things more efficiently on a systems level? How do we give our staff the best experience? How do we utilize them the best, which will then also give them a better experience because that they feel like, you know, with more autonomy comes a better experience. I still don't quite understand from the individual physicians. So the individual physicians, you want to give them data in a usable way. So then are you going to say like, listen, this is what the patients, you know, this is what your overall rating, you know, whatever that might be. These were the most common, this was the most common positive comment that they said about you. And this was the most common negative comment. This is the theme. So this is what we want you to work on right now. Is that the best way to?
That's a way to do it. And I would say I'm very sensitive right now to giving people, like, I think giving back all the comments is really important. I love how you phrased it, which is start with the positive, because I actually think that is really important. And we know, by the way, like if I said to you, what percentage of the comments that patients write for you do you think are positive? In the ambulatory setting, just all comers for physicians, what percentage of patient comments for ambulatory practice physicians are positive comments?
I think I saw this somewhere. It's like 85%.
It is. Which is like, if I asked most docs that question, especially like if they've been reading comments, they don't say, they think it's 50, 35.
Because we only remember the negative. That's how we're designed. We're designed to avoid, you know, danger. And so we're remembering the negative.
So it's really, so I love that you said start with the positive, and absolutely yes. And that's why I was saying earlier, what we want to do is figure out how do we help you do those all the time. I understand you can have a bad day and a bad moment, but the goal is, how do we lean into those things that we know that we can do well and just do them more reliably well? So that is important. I do think it's important to figure out how to feedback the negative comments. But again, like all of us get very defensive when we get negative comments. It's kind of part of who we are. And trying to figure out how you can sift through that and say, okay, you know, of course I was rushed and short because I had 16 other things and gosh, doesn't the patient get it? Well, the problem is, you know, and if it was you and your family there when you had that tough thing. You want, of course, you're empathetic, but you still wanted to have the person answer your questions. So yeah, it's hard. So I think you have to be careful on this. You have to decide, can they handle right now? Because a lot of the workforce has been beaten down. They're not feeling great. So we do have some places where we say, just do the positives right now. You at the practice level need to read the negatives and you need to understand what they are. But don't beat up on your staff right now if you feel like they're not going to be able to handle it. It doesn't mean don't fix the negatives. It just means be careful how you're communicating that back. And this is one of those, like, don't tell me, you know, that my patients are all frustrated because I'm short with them. Well, that's because I'm overworked, we're under-resourced, and we don't have enough staff. So if you asked me how my experience is, here's what me, employee in clinic, is somebody going to listen to me and let me share with you my challenges and fix my challenges? And that's where I feel like, that's why I said this, it's so important that we do the employee experience while we're also addressing the patient experience. And the things that are critical, it's interesting, but not surprising because we're all humans. But what really matters to the workforce are things like trust, respect, involvement in decision making. And then the two other things that really matter are, like, how am I treated by my manager, by my leader, by the doctor in my practice? And then how, if I'm part of a big organization and a lot of folks now are affiliated with hospital systems or other larger organizations, it actually matters what their perception is of the organization's leaders. That actually, and we've run a lot of data on this space. I don't know if you have a turnover problem in your clinic or you are able to keep all your staff.
Personally, my own medical assistant has been with me for, I don't know how long, like 8-7 years. So that's an N of one. But we do have some turnover and it seems like it's getting better. Like, you'll develop a cohesive team and then sometimes someone leaves and then someone else leaves and then some, you know, and now you've got a new team. But yes, the short answer is yes, we do struggle with it.
But it sounds like you've been fortunate personally and, like, overall, you know, except in these like waves, you do pretty well. That's great. And we are seeing improvement, but workforce turnover right now is high. Like up to 25 to 32% based on like what the actual profession level is. Actually, some much lower than like physician turnover is single digits. It's not very high. But what we know is, you know, folks who turn, so there's a much higher turnover rate early on, and there's a much higher turnover rate when those folks don't feel connected with their immediate manager. Like, that's what kind of keeps you sticky. But then, and we've talked about this, like, for you to practice more efficiently, you need your whole practice to run more efficiently. And the only way that happens is when people are like engaged and they're proud of what they're doing and they really care. That's something that we spend a lot of time measuring, which is engagement. And this is the kind of willingness to go above and beyond. And we have seen over the last few years of the pandemic, this enormous downturn, this negative downward trend for engagement across all professions in the workforce, especially in healthcare. And now we're actually coming back up. This is the first time we just ran our data from all of last year, and we're seeing a positive trend. Engagement's improving, which is great, because to do the things that you need to do to make, you know, your workforce hum and your patient experience great, we need everybody to come in like 100%. People coming in not engaged is not going to give you what, it's not going to get us where we need to go.
It's interesting. The great resignation, right? The great resignation. I've always been interested in patient experience and staff experience, right? Because the two, as you said, PX, there's no PX without EX, right? And so the great resignation was my cue to present the patient experience committee to the organization. The reason, the way that I sold it was, listen, we've got patients coming out of our ears, right? We've got so if we improve patient experience, it's not going to move our bottom line. It's not. However, we have a problem with turnover. So how do you improve turnover? You improve staff experience. And by improving staff experience, you then improve patient experience. So, you know, we need to have our eyes on both of these things. And I kind of like backed into the staff experience and I got some friction. I said, wait a second, are we the patient experience committee or are we the staff experience committee? And I said, you can't untangle those things. And I had trouble selling it in the way that you're doing it. I just wasn't able to present it in an effective enough way to get buy-in. But no, we have buy-in now, which is great. And the leadership of my practice is all about it, but it was some work to get there. And there are still those that resist it. So I feel like, you know, if you do have people that are resisting it, the way to sell it to them would be, fine, you've got patients coming out of your ears. What do you have trouble with? Turnover. How do you solve the turnover problem? You solve for staff experience. And when you do solve your staff for staff experience, as you've been saying this whole time, you also address.
I think you did a great job articulating that, like really good. And, you know, we were patient experience at Press Ganey, and we've always done workforce, but we didn't really talk about it that much. Like, we've always been a pretty active surveyor in the workforce. And we changed our kind of national meeting a couple of years ago to be called our Human Experience Conference. And that's kind of how we've refocused, because it's so true. They're completely interconnected. And like, you will not have sustainable change where you want it to be for your patients if you don't have, like you called it, great staff experience. It's not possible. There's more, but like, I'm trying to keep us, you already let me expand from patient experience to staff experience and engagement, which I think is great. There's a whole two other sets of things we haven't covered, which is like culture of safety and diversity, equity, and inclusion and respect. But I don't think we have time to do that.
No, but those sound like great future episodes. So, Dr. Jessica Dudley, thank you so much for your time and for your expertise and really what you're doing for the patients, for the physicians, for the staff, for everybody. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And it sounds like you are doing terrific stuff at your clinic and for your patients and your staff.
Thanks again from Heidi. Elevate your practice with a free AI scribe, zero cost, HIPAA compliant, and time saving. Ready to swap? We've got you covered for past AI scribe expenses. Head to HeidiHealth.com, get started, and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it, or like it, or comment on a social media post. Or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you, this is not a doctor-patient relationship and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.